Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. Now we're going to talk about saving special places in Wisconsin. It's the theme of the current issue of Wisconsin Trails, the June issue. Harriet Brown is the editor of Wisconsin Trails. She is also an award-winning poet and writer, and you can find out more at wisconsintrails.com. Harriet, thank you very much for coming by today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Beautiful day to bike, and so we thank you for that. And Vicki Elkin is the Stewardship Campaign Coordinator and former Executive Director of Gathering Waters Conservancy. And you can find out more about them at gatheringwaters.org. Vicki, thanks very much for coming in today. Pleasure to see you again.
Thanks, Jim. It's great to be here.
And as more and more of the state's natural areas are being developed, you can find out how ordinary Wisconsinites are banding together to protect and preserve what's left through land trusts. Eric Ness has the cover story of the state's 55 active land trusts. What exactly is a land trust, Vicki?
Thanks, Jim. Land trusts, just very simply defined, are private nonprofit organizations that specialize in permanently protecting land for the future. So these may be organizations like the Multinational Nature Conservancy, Pheasants Forever, and some very local organizations like the Kinnickinnick River Land Trust up in the northwest part of the state, Ozaukee Washington Land Trust near Milwaukee. We are very lucky in Wisconsin to have over 50 land trusts now operating in communities from the northern part of the state to the southern part of the state.
Are there areas of the state where they're concentrated, or is it pretty much diffused all across the 72 counties?
Well, one of our early goals at Gathering Waters was to make sure that every community was served by some land trust, and we're at that point now. But with that said, I would say that there's still a greater concentration of land trust organizations in areas of the state where development pressures are the greatest. So Southeast Wisconsin is a good example. Some of our tourist destinations, like we have a very strong land trust up in the Door County area and then around the Twin Cities. But as I'm sure your listeners know, development pressures are increasing everywhere. So the public is really driving the demand for land trusts.
Okay. And Harriet is the editor of Wisconsin Trails, which in many of its issues will center on a theme. I know you had green issue last time around?
In Jan-Feb, actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this time it's saving special places in Wisconsin. How did you go about putting this issue together to include those stories that relate to this theme?
Well, it's a special interest of mine and also of the magazine. So I had known for a long time that I wanted us to cover land trusts. I think they're really important, and they're a key part of the battle to sort of save special places, especially, as you say, with the increasing development pressure. And then we just kind of looked around at some of the things that are what's going on around the state. You know, what are people doing? What are different ways to sort of come at this issue? I'd heard a lot about the Lakeshore Nature Preserve right here in Madison at UW because my husband likes to walk there, and and I knew Bill Cronin, and you know, this was a special place, and I was kind of interested in how the university was taking a role in saving its very special place. So we just kind of took it from there.
So the Lakeshore Preserve is an area involving Lake Mendota, I would presume, since that's the lake of the campus.
Yes, and it's sort of, you know, anyone who's been out to Picnic Point has been on the Lakeshore Nature Preserve, but it encompasses, if you go sort of up Picnic Point and then west there along the shoreline, Second Point, Frouchy Point. There's a lot more in there than most people know, and it's an area that's been sort of fallow for a long time, not much going on, and then the university has thought about developing it. But I'm happy to say that there's a very strong advocacy group involved with its care now, and the university is committed to making it, keeping it a special place for people to enjoy.
Talking with Harriet Brown and Vicki Elkin, and if you'd like to join our conversation, all you have to do is give us a call if you're in Madison at 263-1890, and otherwise it's toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we talk about saving special places in Wisconsin. If you're a member of a land trust or if you have questions about starting one, I think we'd be able to help you with an answer on that. Again, in Madison, 263-1890, and otherwise it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Land has been held under various forms of collective ownership since human history began, according to what I read in Wisconsin Trails. So, Vicki, where did the modern American land trust begin?
Well, actually, the first land trust in the country dates back to the 1890s in Massachusetts. But really, the land trust movement, as we know it today, got started in about the 1980s when Congress passed a set of tax incentives to encourage landowners to either donate land or conservation easements to charitable organizations. Mm-hmm. So since then, we've just seen a dramatic increase in land trusts across the country. Here in Wisconsin, our first land trust was the Ridges Sanctuary up in Door County, and the next one would probably be the Ice Age Park and Trail Foundation. Nature Conservancy got formed around the same time in the 1950s. But since Gathering Waters started in 1994, we've just seen an explosion of land trusts across the state. More than half of them have been formed in the past 10 years. And at this point, we probably have enough organizations, and our challenge is to get out to the private landowners that work with these groups to protect their land. So anyone listening in that's at all interested in the future of your property should contact our organization, and we can help you ensure that it's protected and remains the way it is today into the future.
You spent 6 years at the helm of the organization?
Actually, 8 years.
8 years?
The longest I've ever done anything in my entire life.
and now are in charge of the stewardship campaign. And what is that campaign?
Yeah, I decided last year to step down as executive director because our most important land conservation program in the state, the Warren Knowles Gaylord Nelson Stewardship Program, is due to expire in a couple of years. And we are very committed to see that that program continues well into the future and is funded at a level that keeps pace with rising land values. So as we speak, the legislature is literally considering the fate of this program. If they do not approve a continuation of the program, it's going to end in a couple of years. And I really, anyone that cares about preserving land in this state should voice their support if they can
to their representatives.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, it leads right into Jessica in Green Bay's call. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I was curious, sort of from a sportsman's perspective, I know that a lot of hunters complain about the overcrowding on public lands. Does the stewardship fund play a role in setting aside public lands for hunting and that kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. The stewardship fund has been around since 1989, and since then, the program's protected over 475,000 acres across the state. I think more than 440 of those are open to hunting. Those that aren't include, you know, bike trails or places that are really close to urban development, but almost all the lands protected with stewardship dollars, I think the number is about 95%, is open to hunting, and even more is open to fishing and other forms of recreation. But this really is a program about protecting land for the public. And hunters, obviously, are a big constituency for stewardship program. Good question. Thank you.
Jessica?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. If you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, we are toll-free across the state and elsewhere at 800-642-1234. Or you can use our email address at talk@wpr.org. Also in the June 2007 issue of Wisconsin Trails, the Mammoths of Kenosha County. Tell us about that, Harriet.
Oh, yeah. That's a story that first came to my attention a couple years ago. I've been wanting to have us do something about that. I didn't know, and I wonder how many listeners knew that Kenosha County is like not only a hotspot of archaeological activity, but some of the finds that have gone on there are changing the way people, we think about the origin of the human species in this continent and in this area. So, you know, they're sort of challenging the Clovis theory of migration. How did human beings come to North America, North and Central and South America in the first place? The Clovis theory holds that they, you know, walked across the ice bridge from over the Bering Straits.
They didn't?
Well, we're not sure now because of things that have been found right here in Kenosha County. Mammoth bones with evidence of human tool marks on them, cut marks, human butchering that could not have been done by animals, which predate when that ice bridge happened. So we have pretty good reason to think now that humans were here before then, and if so, that kind of changes how we think about our history here. It's very, very interesting. So I'm happy to have done this story because I think it's just fascinating.
Yeah, one of the pictures shows some of the 40 holes that have been dug at the Mud Lake site in the summer of 2005. Does that continue? Does that excavation continue there? Is it a site that can be visited?
That particular excavation I don't think is going on. There's sort of issues because a lot of the finds in Kenosha County have taken place on private property, and there isn't a concerted sort of effort going on, but there could be. You know, they're sort of on again, off again, interest and ability in going there.
Let's take another call. Going back to the stewardship fund. This is Sandy in Onalaska. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I'm going to ask Vicki Elkin a question about land trusts and when they use stewardship funds to buy lands. I understand that land trusts are private, nonprofit organizations, and the lands they buy, even when they buy them with stewardship funds, I understand that those are their private lands, and they can manage them however they wish. But I'm wondering, with the reauthorization of the stewardship fund, what guarantee does the public have that when those public dollars, the stewardship, our tax dollars, are given to land trusts, what guarantee do we have that we will be able to access those lands? And I'm particularly concerned, as your previous caller was, about hunting, fishing, and trapping. How are we going to have a guarantee that we can access those lands? And most importantly, when a land trust decides to close its lands to some public access, what is the process for that? How do they square that with DNR and with the public? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
Thanks, Sandy. I'm really glad you asked that question because I think this is an opportunity to clear up some misperceptions about the program. When land trusts get a grant through the stewardship program to buy land, they then enter into a legally binding management agreement with the department about how that land will be managed and what sorts of access the public will have. So we cannot decide to unilaterally close a property to public access at any point. And these are binding permanent agreements we have with the department. And we all understand when public dollars are involved that these lands have to be open to the public. In terms of, what was the second question?
I don't recall specifically because we're getting so close to the
news.
What's
the process?
Oh, the process.
Of closing those lands.
Yes, which you've just clarified, I think.
Well, I guess that's actually more of a process of opening those lands in terms of having a discussion between the land trust and the Department of Natural Resources about what the conservation values are of that property and what appropriate public use is. So we're always looking to maximize public access rather than close it to public access. So if anyone has any concerns or questions about the types of activities that are allowable on these properties, you can check that out on the DNR website, and it has very good up-to-date information for folks.
We'll be back with Harriet Brown and Vicki Elkin. Talk more with them in just a moment after we check up on the latest news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today. As we talk about saving special places in Wisconsin, our guest is Harriet Brown, the editor of Wisconsin Trails magazine, an award-winning poet and writer. The June issue of Wisconsin Trails is devoted to saving special places. You can see more about the issue at wisconsintrails.com. Harriet, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Vicki Elkin is the Stewardship Campaign Coordinator and former Executive Director of Gathering Waters Conservancy. More about their organization at gatheringwaters.org. And Vicki, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jim. It's great to be here.
And we had talked in our first quarter hour about saving special places and land trusts. And we talked about what a land trust is, but let's get into it a little bit more. If I were a person who had some land that I wanted to do something with to preserve it, a land trust is a possibility. What's the process of doing this, of organizing a land trust?
That's a really good question, Jim. Basically, what I would encourage landowners to do is first contact Gathering Waters just to learn the basics of what their different options may be for conserving their land. And there are a lot of different tools, and I can get into those later if some of your callers are interested. But we can just help you with the initial process. We would then refer you to probably to a local organization. So these are people in your communities that have formed a land trust to protect land. And really, it's a friendly and positive process. You go in and you talk to them about what your land is, what your goals are for the property, review the natural features. And I think as a landowner, probably the most important thing for you to do is be clear about what your long-term wishes for that property are. So, for example, you may say, you know, I want this land to be the way it is today forever, but would like to hold on to two home sites for my children when they get older. Those are really important things to know going into this discussion, because then the local folks at the Land Trust can help you figure out what the best way to achieving your goals while also protecting the conservation values are.
Anything to add to that, Harriet?
Well, I have a question, actually. I know that, like, for example, let's say I have some land and I go to, and I want it protected, and I go to the Nature Conservancy, and I say I want this land protected, and what they're very likely to say to me is, there's nothing really worth protecting on your land from a sort of big picture point of view. Is that also true with land trusts? I mean, do you have to have some special endangered species on your land or something to make it worth protecting?
Actually, I'd say much less so. In fact, part of the reason we have so many local land trusts, you know, I often get the question, why do we need local land trusts when we have the Nature Conservancy? And the Nature Conservancy protects the best of the best from, you know, a national and international perspective, and whereas our groups protect what's important to the local community. So maybe it's an important wetland system or a favorite fishing spot or someplace local folks have picnicked for years. So our measures of what's an important conservation place are very different than the Nature Conservancies, although we can't complement each other very, very well. You know, there are some properties out there that probably do not merit permanent protection. You know, it might be a very urban property without a lot of natural features, but that's a discussion to have with your local land trust, and they'll have a very clear sense of what is important to them. And it's, frankly, it's a little bit different for each group, but yes, we are looking for properties that have open space value, natural value. A lot of land trusts are actively involved in preserving farmland and working forests. So,
well, that's such a big issue in the state now, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
Disappearing farmland.
All right. That was pointed out in the Future of Farming and Rural Life in Wisconsin conference that was held in Madison last week. Let's go back to the phones and take some calls from people who have been waiting a while. If you, there is a line open for you at 263-1890 in Madison or 800-642-1234. We're going to start with Alex in Madison. Alex, what's in your mind today?
Oh, hi. I had heard that the stewardship fund is due to expire at some point, and I'm concerned that as the state seeks ways to trim the budget and keep property taxes down, that that's going to become a target of a way of saving some money. I was looking for an update on where the stewardship fund stands and what I can do as a citizen to make sure that it's reauthorized.
Vicki, you want to pick that one?
Sure. Yes, it is due to expire in a couple of years. Fortunately, Governor Doyle has proposed extending the program through 2020, and it included that in his version of the budget, which is now being considered by the legislature. I think there are serious debates going on within the legislature about what the program should be funded at. Governor Doyle's proposed $105 million a year starting in 2011, up from $60 million now, which sounds like a big increase. But if you have been tracking at all rising land values across the state, it really is a modest increase. I think anyone that's concerned about the future of protecting lands in Wisconsin should definitely call their lawmakers as soon as possible. This will be one of those big ticket items in the budget that is debated until the budget signed by the governor in the final days.
Yeah, I guess I'm just worried that if we don't set the money aside now and buy the land, it's going to be too expensive down the road, and we all, you know, 10 years, 15 years from now, it might look like a real bad decision.
Right. Well, not only will it be more expensive, chances are it might be lost. These lands are getting developed at astronomical rates, and, you know, people feel that all over the state.
Alex, thank you very much for bringing up that point. Let's go to Allison next in Green Bay. Allison, what can we do for you?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you all for what you're doing, Jim and Harriet and Vicki. A century ago, a legislature was faced with accepting a proposal for a state park system. And when we look at our state parks today, what a great investment that was a century ago. And I just want to say thank you to both of you and to the host for having this wonderful program. And I hope that, you know, we're in the 21st century. We all know that we cannot establish or go out and create what a century ago was created, and we should hang on to that and realize just how wonderful. The last caller before Alex was asking questions about public access. So going back to our state parks and public access, a century ago we had so many fewer Wisconsin residents and tourism. And is there any discussion with the renewal of the stewardship program to investing part of those and directing those stewardship dollars? Our state parks in some areas, in Peninsula State Park north of Green Bay, is loved to death. It's one of the most popular within the system. So great. Let's increase those stewardship dollars. And is it possible to use stewardship dollars to expand and restore areas of our already existing park system?
Yes, actually, I believe almost every single state park in the state over the past 10 years has benefited from the stewardship fund, either in adding additional lands or actually creating facilities at those parks. So that's a big part of the picture, is let's keep our state parks wonderful places to visit, as well as adding new parks. There's a couple new parks that have been added in the past couple of years, the Straight Lake Park up in the northwest part of the state, Tommy Thompson State Park up in Marinette County. So the stewardship fund is a critical part of maintaining and expanding our state park system.
Allison?
Can I ask just a sub? Have we projected population and use? Is that being considered? Just how much more public access, what the demand is on these parks, and to justify the cost?
That's something that we're definitely doing as a group that's advocating for the stewardship program, and I would encourage you to let your legislators know to think about the future as well. You know, I was talking to a Republican legislator the other day who was having a hard time thinking about the size of the increase the governor's proposed, but she said, you know, this really is something we can really feel good about in terms of what we're doing for the future. You know, we spend a lot of money on roads. They always need to be repaired. They always need to be upgraded. But knowing that certain places will be around for our kids and grandchildren, it's really important.
Allison, thanks very much for the call. And Sue is next in Waupaca. Hello, Sue.
Hello. First of all, I want to congratulate you on the stewardship fund. I'm a member of a friends group at Hartman Creek State Park. We're trying to complete a project, and we have a matching grant from the stewardship. So without that, we wouldn't be able to work on these projects. But in doing so, I've been combating invasive species in the park for many, many years, and I see some land that's close to the park, and I believe it is in the Northeastern Wisconsin Land Trust, and it's adjoining a rustic road, and it's inundated with garlic mustard. I've contacted the landowner and the caretaker, but I believe they're simply overwhelmed by the problem. Do you support landowners at all?
We have there are various programs available that we participate in to help landowners, and I would encourage you to call one of my coworkers who knows more about them. But there's a landowner incentives program that we've been very involved in getting state and federal funding for, specifically for land management. We also have lots of information and, frankly, folks on the ground to help rally volunteers to help with these efforts. But as anyone that owns land knows, it's a constant battle with the invasives. And I would encourage you to contact us to figure out how you can get some more help near Hartman Creek.
Thank you.
All right, Sue. Thank you very much for the call. We want to make sure that we cover the June issue of Wisconsin Trails. We have talked about a story on land trust that Eric Ness put together, a really wonderful story. And there's also Bill Cronin's personal observations about the Lakeshore Natural Preserve. But there's the Great Wedding Train. Not only are there mammoths in Kenosha County we didn't know about, but there's the Great Wedding Train that I'd not heard of either. What's the story on that, Harriet?
That's right. Well, you too could get married on the Great Wedding Train if you wanted.
If I weren't.
If you weren't already married. Perhaps you'd like to renew your vows, Jim. I don't know. You should ask your wife.
I think I've renewed my vows over and over in self-defense.
The story is called Going to the Chapel of Love, and it's sort of based on the idea that if, you know, if you can't go to the chapel, maybe the chapel can come to you. But it's this couple in Spooner. They've got the Great Northern Railroad, I think, is the name of their sort of organization. But they have restored these old train cars, originally made for chapel cars. There used to be trains that, you know, traveled the state. These sort of chapel cars, bringing religion and preachers and salvation in various kinds, I think, around the state. So They have put together, done a marvelous job, I think, of restoring these cars and run the Great Wedding Train. And you can take an excursion on the Great. You can get married on there. They did, the Vreelands. They got married on the train. Or you can simply take a fun ride into the countryside around Spooner and imagine that you're getting married on the train. So that's a lot of fun.
You also have the demise of the honeybee story.
Yes, that is a big story, as anyone who's been listening to the news probably knows. It's not specific to Wisconsin, but it's certainly happening here, that the honeybees are just disappearing. Nobody knows why, where they're going, but it has very serious ramifications for us agriculturally as well as sort of environmentally. So this story really sort of looks at why are honeybees important to us, why mm-hmm. should we care? And, you know, since we went to press, I heard one study that came out that's the one theory that's maybe it's the rise in the use of cell phones, that the cell phone signals disorient the bees as they're on their way back from their honey gathering expeditions and they simply can't find their way back to the hive. I don't think anybody really knows. And also, where are they going? It's not like we're finding lots of corpses of honeybees.
No.
They're simply disappearing. It's very bizarre. So.
We're going to take this up again with Phil Pelletieri. He'll be along on Wednesday on about his monthly visit here. And so we'll get an update as far as what he's been able to determine
Great.
On the demise of the honeybees. Mm-hmm. Back to the phones we go to Corey in Stoddard next. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say that I grew up on the East Coast in the midst of one of the most wonderful deciduous eastern forests, which included a creek and wonderful wildflowers and ferns and whatnot, and now that's completely gone due to development. So I've carried that with me my whole life, that experience, lost experience, and now I have the good fortune of living on land above the Mississippi River, which includes farmland and woodlands. And my husband and I don't foresee retiring here and have considered donating land to a conservancy, but we view our land as a haven for wildlife of all kinds, down to the smallest spider. And I am not an advocate of hunting. I do not carry the Midwestern need for hunting. And the last thing I want on our land would be hunters and trappers. And I would like to know if there's any possibility of a endless arrangement to ban hunting and trapping and those sorts of activities from any land that's put into a conservancy.
Well, Corey, one option that a landowner chooses is something called a conservation easement. And basically, this is a land preservation agreement. It's a binding agreement that a landowner will enter into with a land trust and sometimes with a unit of government that restricts the current and future uses of the property. And the most common restriction included in an easement is a limitation or prohibition on development. But the land itself remains in private ownership. Those restrictions are recorded in that legal document called a conservation easement, which then is attached to the deed. So all future landowners are bound by those restrictions. But the right to hunt or not hunt the properties remains with the landowner. The landowner can post it as private property. They can usually continue to farm it or use it the way they always have. So if that's something, if you want to protect your land into the future, but you want it to basically remain as private property, an easement would probably be the best option for you. And there are some really significant tax advantages of donating an easement, and sometimes there's actually public money available to sell an easement. So that would probably be for somebody that doesn't want to just open their property up to all sorts of public access, whether it's hunting or mountain biking or, you know, hiking, an easement's probably the best option.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, Corey, thank you very much for the call. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. On we go to Ned in Wausau. Hi, Ned.
Hi. Thank you for having this show and
sure.
This wonderful guest. I don't think that the members of the people of Wisconsin can assume that the stewardship program will automatically be renewed. And when it does expire in a year or two, I think it's critically important that we continue funding this properly and not just whittle it down to a small amount, because these are some of the best spent dollars in our entire state budget. I would like to see us continue it and even strengthen it from its current levels. As your guest stated earlier, the prices for land, especially high-quality land that would go into a land trust, will only go up in the future as land prices all over the state continue to climb. And finally, I'd like to just ask people that believe as I do to contact, or regardless of your opinion, contact your representatives on this topic, and especially in the Assembly, because I think we're going to have enough votes in the Senate, but even there it's going to be close. And please let them know what your opinion is on land trusts.
Thanks, Ned. That was great. I couldn't have said it better myself. One thing that Ned alluded to is the fact that the Stewardship Fund is a great investment. And one thing I think I've referred to without really explaining that well is that a lot of the money in the stewardship program is made available as matching grants to land trusts and local units of government. These are 50% grants that we then have to match with private dollars or local dollars. And really, it is a wise use of state funds because we leverage our state dollars many times over through these grants. One example, the city of Mequon in the southeast part of the state, just north of Milwaukee, which is a very rapidly urbanizing area, is creating something called the Mequon Preserve. And when finished, this will be an urban park the size of Central Park in New York. And they've received, I think, $800,000 in stewardship, but have leveraged an additional $5 million to protect that property down there. And stewardship is kind of the linchpin that holds it all together. Mm-hmm. It's usually the initial grant you get, but they've been able to raise money from the city and private donors and the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. So it really is a great investment.
Ned, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
And Jim in Ogdensburg, let's go to you next. Hi.
Yeah, I have a question for Vicki. I guess I'm hoping that she could help me put into perspective how much the governor is proposing to spend on stewardship. I think he's talking about a little over $100 million a year. And how does that compare to other statewide programs, like comparing it to how much we spend on transportation per year or on roads per year, that type of thing? It sounds like a lot of money. I guess I'm just trying to understand where it is in some of the other programs compared to other programs.
You know, Jim, I wish I had those numbers off the top of my head because it's really shocking how much less is spent on the stewardship fund than is spent on other programs. I know just as one example, I think the Stillwater Bridge up in connecting Minnesota and Wisconsin is about $350 million in bonding money. So we're talking about $100 million a year to buy land across the state versus $350 million on a bridge that's going to have to be repaired and resurfaced probably on a fairly regular basis. When you look at things like the corrections budget, stewardship is an incredibly small part of the state budget. It's much less than 10% of our overall bonding budget.
Okay, and I have one other question, I guess. I'd just like you to comment on the current need, because there's so much land that's in public use right now that's being closed. Power companies are selling off their land. Mm-hmm. Paper companies are selling off their land, and it seems like there's a real immediate need.
Mm-hmm. That's another really important thing. I think 90% of industrial forest lands have changed hands in the past 10 years, and that trend is going to continue. And because of something called the Managed Forest Law, these lands have traditionally been open to the public for hunting and other forms of public recreation. But we are having to really fight to keep those lands open to the public in the future. And as they get sold off and developed, we're just really going to lose access to those properties. So that's one of the reasons we really need a well-funded stewardship fund.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. And Penny in Appleton is last. Hi, Penny.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay. She just talked about conservation easements with land trusts, and I'm assuming the land trust then has to follow up to make sure the laws are followed and the land isn't developed inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And since land trusts are nonprofit organizations, I was wondering, what can volunteers do to help in this process? Can they be trained some way to help with the monitoring?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we really rely on land trusts to do the annual or semi-annual monitoring of those conservation agreements. We take our responsibility to uphold the terms of those easements very, very seriously, and we visit the properties regularly. But most of the land trusts do train volunteers to go out, visit the landowners, walk the land, make sure that they are not intentionally or unintentionally in violation of the easement. If you're interested, Penny, please contact our office and we can tell you more about how you can get involved.
Penny, thank you very much. And if someone wants to get a hold of you, can they just go through the website, gatheringwaters.org, or is there a phone number that they would use?
Oh, it's 608-251-9131.
Okay. And thanks very much, Vicki, for being here today. Vicki Elkin, Stewardship Campaign Coordinator for Gathering Waters, and Harriet Brown, the editor of Wisconsin Trails. The June issue is the Saving Special Places in Wisconsin issue. We mentioned many of the stories. There's also Michael Perry's My Wisconsin, The Brotherhood at the Barbecue, and Gone for the Weekend, a visit to Waupaca's Chain of Lakes and a day hike through the Pinoki Range. It's a great issue, and I know you'll enjoy it. More at WisconsinTrails.com. Harriet, thanks for being here today.
Thank you,
Look forward
Jim.
To another visit. I'm Jim Packard. Tomorrow we've got Dave Marinus and Carrie Trask, both good writers, in here on the Ideas Network.